and so the topic of the next week or two, hopefully, are all going to focus on Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. Some of them are going to focus on the past, the history of Eretz Yisrael, as contained in Chumash, in Tanakh, in Chazal, and some of them are going to focus on the future of Eretz Yisrael in the Yemos HaMashiach, and what exactly Eretz Yisrael is going to look like in those times, and maybe we'll have a chance to bridge the gap with the present as well. So I wanted to start back in prehistory, when Eretz Yisrael was known as Eretz Canaan. It was a land of Canaan, and very often Chazal referred to the inhabitants of the land of Canaan as the seven nations, the Shiva Umos, the Zayin Amamin, seven nations. And Chazal are not making up this number. The number appears in the Torah. Hashem tells the Jews, I'm taking you out of Egypt, and I'm going to bring you to the land of Canaan, where dwell seven nations that are greater and mightier than yourselves. And so the Torah itself uses this term, Shiva Umos, Shiva Amim, seven nations, to describe the inhabitants of the land of Canaan at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. However, one of my favorite lines in Rishonim is the Raavad in the beginning of Teres Kohanim, and he says, Kol makom shamanu chachaminu zal minyan, tzarich minyan leminyaneihem. I mentioned this last year. Every time that Chazal count and give you a number, they give you a list, and then they count up all the items on the list, you've got to count it up independently. Because sometimes you'll discover that there are more items on the list or fewer items on the list than the number which Chazal provided you. And when that's the case, undoubtedly, there's some sort of a message. Chazal are telling you that that perhaps there's something which you counted as being on the list, but which doesn't belong on the list. Or two entries that you thought were two, but really ought to be condensed into one. And the same is true when it comes to these Shiva Umos, the seven nations of Canaan. If you go through the different places in the Torah where these seven nations are introduced to the Torah's audience, you'll discover that there are no fewer than five different numbers that are given to these nations. And I just want to read through the sources that contain the different introductions of the Canaanite nations to us, and to reflect a little bit, primarily through the lens of the Ramban's commentary, on what might account for the discrepancies in numbers of nations on the list. So the starting point is in Parshas Noach, where the Torah tells us about all the descendants of Noach, right? Shem, Cham, and Yafes. And Cham was the father of Canaan, and Canaan was the father of the following nations. It's source number one. I'm inviting everybody to count along with me, so that we're all on the same page here. So Canaan Yalad, Es Tzidon Bichoro, so Tzidon is one, Ve'et Ches, that's two, Ve'es HaYevusi is three, Ve'es HaEmori is four, Ve'es HaGirgashi is five, Ve'es HaChivi is six, Ve'es HaArki is seven, Ve'es HaSini is eight, Ve'es HaArvadi is nine, Ve'es HaTzimari is ten, Ve'es HaChamasi 11. So Canaan had 11 sons. Not seven sons, 11 sons. The next time that we encounter the descendants of Canaan is in Parashas Lecha, in the Bris Bein Asarim, where God promises Abraham, he says, I'm going to give you the land of all of these nations. And God lists off the nations who were the inhabitants of the land to Abraham. And in this list, we find, this is source number two, and again, I'm inviting you to count together with me. Bayom Ahu Karas Hashem Es Avram Bris Lemar, God sealed a covenant with Avram. He said, I've given this land to your descendants. Note the given, it'll be important later this week. Minahar Mitzrayim Ad HaNahar HaGadol Nahar Pras, delineated the boundaries from the river of Egypt until the Euphrates. And then he lists off the names of the nations that lived within these borders. And he tells you they're the Keni, the Knizi, the Kadmoni. That's three. Chiti, Prizi, and Rephaim. Another three makes six. Ve'esha Emori, ve'esha Knani, ve'esha Girgashi, ve'esha Yevusi. Another four. Three, three, and four is ten. So one of these nations seems to have dropped off the list. But it's not just that one nation dropped off the list. There's another anomaly, another discrepancy between these two lists as well. It's a much bigger discrepancy than that. What's a discrepancy? You can feel free to look ahead. I wrote it on the sheet. The names changed. Right, there are only four names that remain the same on both lists. Right, and then the first list has seven names that don't appear on the second. And the second list has six names that don't appear on the first. So the names seem to have changed. They've metamorphosed from the time of Noah to the time of Abraham. And the Ramban takes notice of this. He takes notice both of the shift, the fact that we've replaced seven names with six other names, and we've gone from 11 to 10. And he makes the following comment. You have to tell me whether you prefer for me to read in Hebrew or in English. English, okay. Says the Ramban in source number 3, these 10 nations are descendants of Canaan, but most of their names had changed by Abraham's day. In other words, that Canaan gave his oldest son named Sidon, and then the next son he named Chet, and then Yevusi, and Amori, and Girgashi. But the descendants of six of these sons of Canaan at some point changed the name by which they were known, so that in the times of Abraham it could be that the name Chivi was changed into Brizi or something along those lines. The names changed. You know, they moved to Eretz Canaan, so they Hebraicized them. Yes. The Ramban says, in Parshas Noach, they're listed by the names they were given at birth. And after they separated each one to his land, they were called by other names, perhaps after the names of their lands. In other words, that just like when Esav moved to the mountain of Seir, so he became known as Seir. That became the name of Esav's nation. He's known as Seir as well as Edom. So too, the Canaanites, when they moved to various geographical locations, which already had established names, maybe from the time before the Mabul, or maybe because there was some sort of a chachma that people knew that based on the geography and the geology and topography, that it deserved a particular type of name. For whatever reason, the places which were uninhabited, presumably, before the Canaanim moved there, they already had names. And the Canaanim simply took upon themselves the names of the places where they moved. It's very interesting, though, that if you look, for example, on the first list, one of the sons of Canaan is the Sini, which is named after, or which resembles...
Chinese
or Sinai? Sinai, I would think. Sinai, right? I would have thought that Sini has to do with Sinai, with the Sinai Desert, with Mount Sinai. So it's strange, according to the Ramban, it would make a lot more sense for that name to appear on the second list, right, if it has to do with the place, rather than on the first list. Right, unless you say that sometimes the nations took on the name of the place, and sometimes the nations gave their name to a place. And so sometimes you may have a place, a nation that calls itself Kinizi because they moved to the country of Kinaz, and there may be a different country which is called Sinai because the Sini moved there. There's no reason that it has to go in one direction. It could go in both directions as well. Some nations prefer one way, other nations prefer the other way.
You see it in this parasha, this coming up parasha, the parashat Matot, when they... Yair went to get those places. He named it Chavot Yair.
Chavot Yair, yeah. Precisely. Precisely. So we see that people give their name to the place where they move.
How about B'nai Chet? Like Avraham Avinu was B'nai Chet. How would that be? Are they Chiti?
Yeah, they're Chiti.
Chiti
is the one of the names that appear on both lists. Yeah. That was Canaan named his son Ches. That was his second son. Right, and the nation of the Chiti, right, that lasted even to the times of Abraham and beyond. Apparently, there was a big Hittite empire which was a dominant regional force in the times of Abraham, and that was descended from Chis, the son of Canaan.
They have found some evidence of the Hittite Empire, you know, the archaeologists.
Yeah, that's probably how we know about it. I mean, how we know about it other than the Torah doesn't tell us very much about Hittites being an empire. But you know that they're the Canaanite nations. Alternately, says the Ramban, we're now on the fifth line, perhaps the Arki and the Sini had families descended from them that perished. And Kini and Knizi were the sole surviving members of those families, so they became the heads for their descendants. In other words, that for a few generations after Noah, there was a nation that was called the Arki nation, and the Arki nation suffered a calamity, and so most of its members were wiped out. And then there were one or two members who were remaining. Perhaps one of them was named Knizi, and they reconstituted, they founded the nation anew. But rather than call themselves by the ancient name of Arki or the ancient name of Sini, they decided to name the nation now after themselves, because after all, in a sense, they were the founding fathers of these new nations. The whole nation, they were the only surviving descendant, and then the nation proliferated from them, and so therefore the nation chose to name themselves after their more immediate ancestor rather than after their more distant ancestor. So then the Ramban notes something very interesting. He says, you'll find that sometimes it's like a pendulum, it swings back. So there was a nation named Chivi, who was one of the sons of Canaan. But on the list that was given to Abraham, there is no Chivi. But then when the Jews are leaving Egypt, God says, I'm going to give you the land of the Chivi. So somehow the Chivi was not a nation in the time of Abraham, but 200 and something odd years later, the Chivi was once more a nation. Somehow they went back. They decided, okay, we're no longer going to call ourselves the Knizi, or we'll no longer call ourselves the Kadmoni, but instead we'll go back to calling ourselves the Chivi. And so the Chivi became a nation again at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Says Ramban, the Chivi listed here is not listed by Avraham's gift. Even though Chivi was one of the nations given to Avraham, because Hashem tells the Jews after they leave Egypt that I'm going to give you the land of the Chivi, which I promised to your ancestor Avraham. So the Ramban doesn't explain why that is, but again, presumably what happened was is that the people were disillusioned and disenchanted with the values of the Prizi or the Rephaim, and so they decided, okay, we'll go back, we'll take an older name, and we'll use that to redefine who we are. And so they went back to calling themselves the Chivi, and they abandoned the name of their more recent ancestor. Perhaps they abandoned the name of the land where they were living, and they took on the historical name of Chivi after Chivi, the son of Canaan. Here, this is what Mr. Ben Chaviv noted. Canaan himself is sometimes listed together with his sons. Again, it's not surprising. It could be that there were different times in history where certain nations preferred to identify themselves with their ultimate ancestor, with Canaan, rather with one of their more immediate ancestors. And also, says Ramban, one of the sons is never listed. Sidon. There's never a Sidoni. If you go through all the places where the nations of Canaan are listed, you'll never find a nation called a Sidoni. Now we know there is a city called Sidon.
Sidon.
Sidon comes up many places in Tanakh, right? But there is never a Sidoni nation that's listed in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. So Ramban says it probably is because he didn't accomplish as much as his brothers. A person needs to do something. He needs to have a certain amount of valor or a certain number of descendants in order to be called a nation. And anyone whose accomplishments are below whatever the threshold is doesn't end up becoming a nation.
Were they part of the
Phoenicians?
Phoenicians.
No, Phoenicians were in the island. Phoenicians were island off in the Mediterranean.
No, but they were later on.
Yeah, but Phoenicia is not on the land of Eretz Israel, so it cannot be. Period. We are talking about the Shivat Ha'amamim, those that were in Eretz Israel.
Oh, in Eretz Israel. Okay.
If there's anyone here who's familiar with the geography, you have to find one of those Das Mikra atlases and see. They should identify for us where the Tzidon is.
If I remember, I'll bring it.
So the descendants, says the Ramban, of this brother, whichever one it was, who didn't end up getting a nation, were called by his father's name when they're listed with his brother's descendants. So it could be that the Tzidonim, the descendants of Tzidon, together with the descendants of one of the other brothers, banded together, they merged, and in order to avoid a fight about whether they should call themselves Tzidoni or whether they should call themselves Hamati, they decided just to call ourselves Kanani. Right, they're both descended from Canaan, and so to avoid any problems, they decided to call themselves by the names of their more distant ancestor. Perhaps this one was Tzidon, the firstborn, who together with one of his brothers, who did not father a nation, was called simply Kanani.
This is the Ramban, you're saying?
This is the Ramban, yes. Now, it's worth noting that there's only one other place in the Torah where the 10 nations are mentioned again. Most places, well, maybe two other places. Right? But right now, God promises Avram at the Bris Bein Abisarim, I'm going to give you 10 nations. We know that the Jews, when they left Egypt, were only promised 7 nations. The 10 nations come up once and maybe twice more in the Torah. Does anyone know where the two places are? Don't feel like you need to answer, but anyone who knows? Okay. One of the places is by the Ari Miklat. There is a mitzvah to separate 6 Ari Miklat for the territory of the 7 nations. Then the Torah says, we have the source.
Azi Abdil Moshe.
I don't think it's Azi Abdil Moshe. I think that it's in Parshas. Where is it? Shoftim. Yutes, probably. It says that when God will give us the territory of the other 3 nations, the Keni, the Knezi, and the Kadmoni, so we have a mitzvah to separate another 3 Ari Miklat. I think this may be the only mitzvah which we are unable to fulfill until Mashiach comes. Well, the other mitzvahs we were able to fulfill historically at an earlier point in our history, and this may be the only mitzvah that is impossible for us to fulfill because it's dependent on the coming of Mashiach and God giving us the territory of the other 3 nations. If God will expand your borders, like he swore to your ancestors, like he swore to Avraham. In other words, when you get the territory, all the territory that God promised to Avraham, and he gives you the entire land that he promised to give your ancestors. Why? Because he's confident that you'll forever keep the entire Torah, etc., etc. Then via Saftalicha Oj Shaloshareem Al Hashalosha Ila, you should add on another 3 Ari Miklat. So Chazal understand that this reference to Kasher Nishba Lavosecha, Asher Diber Lasis Lavosecha, Vanasan Lacha es Kol Haaretz, that's an allusion to the other 3 nations that God promised to Abraham, which were not granted to the Jews when they left Egypt. That's one of the 2 places where the full 10 nations are mentioned again by Tanakh, by Chum HaChemish or Chum Shetorah. The second place where it comes up is probably going to be the topic that we'll talk about tomorrow or the next day, and that is when the tribe of Levi, they're told that they're not supposed to take an inheritance from the land of the 7 nations which the Jews conquer when they leave Egypt. There's a tremendous controversy whether that applies to the other 3 nations as well. And so we may discover that also, that the Torah has an allusion to the other 3 nations and whether or not Shevet Levi are going to be allowed to take an inheritance from the territories of those other 3 nations. And that maybe we'll get to tomorrow. So now I think we can bid farewell to the 10 and we can turn our attention to the 7 that seem to survive to the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And source number 4 comes from Parshas Va'eschanan. The Torah says, "Ki yivyacha Hashem Elokecha el haaretz asher atav v'shamal rishta." no mention of having sworn to your ancestors, right? But the land that you will end up coming into. V'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha, and God will cause many nations to be cast out before you. Hachiti, v'agirgashi, v'ha'emori, v'aknani, v'aprizi, v'achivi, v'ayivusi. Seven nations, shiv'a goyim, rabim v'atsumim mimecha. So here we have the Torah counts them up for us, shiv'a goyim, seven nations that are greater than you. This is where we get the seven nations from. And there's a number of mitzvos that seem to apply to these seven nations. The Yehusi were the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, yes. There's a mitzvah of hacharim tacharim osam, right, to make all of their property chirem. Lo sichrot lahem bris, not to make a covenant, a treaty with them. Lo sichanim, not to give them chayin. Lo tischatein bam, right, four mitzvos which may apply uniquely, right, to these seven nations. So how come, it's worth thinking about, right, what's the status of the other three nations vis-a-vis these mitzvos, right? The mitzvah of lo tichros lahem bris, no treaties. What? How with the other three nations? Right? Now, it could be that it's a moot point. The Rashi says that the other three nations were conquered by Ammon, Moab, and Edom, respectively. And so Rashi says that the reason that we only have seven nations at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim is because the remaining three nations disappeared. Right? They were destroyed by three newer nations, by Ammon, by Moab, and by Edom. The Ramban, though, disagrees, and he suggests that it could be that these other three nations were still around at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and so it may be important to consider how these mitzvos apply to the other three nations, which are not the ones Asher Bashama, they were not the ones that God promised to the Jews leaving Egypt, they were only promised to Abraham. So the Ramban, again, comments on this shift from 10 to 7. Why is it, right, if you disagree with Rashi and say that those other three nations were still around at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so why didn't God give those nations to the Jews the way that he had told Avraham he would? And even according to Rashi, right, if the nations weren't around, it seems that the Jews didn't even get their territory. God says to Avraham, I'm going to give you the territory of these 10 nations. Why did he only give them the territory of 7 nations? So here the Ramban in source number 5 addresses this, and he says, Hashem only promised them these 7 nations. Here, referring to the parsha of the Ari Miklat, where he talks about the three additional Ari Miklat that we're supposed to add when we get the remaining three nations, that's why he mentions the Avos, that Hashem will widen your borders as he swore to the Avos, and give you all the lands that he swore to the Avos. This refers to the 10 nations that were spoken of to Avraham. Right? But in the times of Moshe and Yehoshua, Hashem wanted to bequeath to the Jews just these 7 that he promised them in Egypt and in the desert, because he knew that they had sufficient merit to deserve such a bequest. In other words, that the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael is dependent, it's conditional, on the zechuyos of Am Yisrael. If Am Yisrael has a lot of zechuyos, so then they'll merit more of Eretz Yisrael. If they have fewer zechuyos, then chas v'chalidho, they'll merit less of Eretz Yisrael. At the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Hashem knew, with his foreknowledge of the future, that even after everything that would transpire during the 49 days between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, and even after all that would transpire in the desert, their merits would only be sufficient to entitle them and to make them deserve the land of 7 nations. And so, again, with his foreknowledge, Hashem told them that they are only going to inherit those 7 nations. It's conditional on their merit. Hashem knew that they would only have enough zechuyos to entitle them to the land of 7 nations, and therefore, Hashem only promised them those 7 when they were in Mitzrayim.
warned not to marry, that their children be intermarried.
And they were warned that, as well as other things also. No treaties.
They get intermarried, the Jews.
Right?
That's
a machlokis in the Gemara about whether Lotis Chateinbam is a reference only to the Shiva Umos and that there's other Isurim that cover the other nations, right? Or whether Lotis Chateinbam is a reference to all of the different nations, regardless of whether they're from these seven of Canaan or not. The Ramban continues. Our inheritance of the other three nations depends on our keeping the entire Torah, loving Hashem and going in His path. When we reach that level of merit, when we love Hashem with such a complete love that it will last forever, that He will know that we will never sin again, then He'll give us all the nations. This refers to the time when Hashem, Umol Hashem Elokecha es levavcha ve'es levav zarecha, Hashem will circumcise our hearts and our children's hearts. The mention of the children's hearts, says the Ramban, indicates that the love we'll feel in that time will be perpetual for all generations. When we reach that level of Umal Hashem Elokecha es levavcha ve'es levav zarecha, so then our merit will have reached a level where we'll be entitled to get all of the 10 territories, all of the 10 nations that Hashem had promised to Avraham. And so this is the Ramban's explanation for the fact that we went from 10 in the times of Avraham to 7 in the times of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that Avraham was told what the Jews would get ultimately when they deserved all 10. In the times of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they only deserved 7. It's interesting, you could imagine, maybe they would have only deserved 6. Maybe they would have only deserved 5. It seems almost like an arbitrary number. They deserved 7, so they got 7. Could have been very, very different. But that happens to be as the level that they worked themselves to. So you would think that's the end of the story. The problem is that there are a number of places in the Torah where the nations are listed, but there are fewer than 7 nations. Think about this morning in davening. Did any of you give a list, did any of you recite a list of the Canaan nations in your davening this morning? Well, how many nations were on that list? There are 6 on the list. There are only 6. V'charosi mo'abris. If you look on the bottom of page 3, you'll see that there's a chart. You can compare it. And we have here Kenani, Chiti, Emori, Prizi, Yevusi, and Girgashi. We're going to have to come back to this, hopefully, at the end of this year and try to figure out what's going on with these 6. But for now, let's leave this aside, and we'll turn to the lists of 6 that appear not in Divrei Hayamim, but in Chamisha Chumashi Torah, the lists of 6 nations. In source number 7, it says, Hashem said, Ra'o ra'iti et ani ami asher b'mitzrayim, I've seen the affliction of my nation in Egypt. I've come down to bring them up from Egypt to the Eretz Tova u'Rechava, the land which is good, the land which is wide, the land which is flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Knani, the Chiti, the Emori, the Prizi, the Chivi, and the Yevusi. So we're missing one of the nations. And the nation that we're missing is the Girgashi. Again, if you look at the chart on the bottom of page 3, you can contrast the list of 7 with the list of 6. You'll see that everything is constant except that the Girgashi seems to be absent. And then again, we don't need to read this inside, but source number 7, Parshas Mishpatim, again has a list of 6 nations, and it's the same 6 nations as in source number 6, Emori, Chiti, Prizi, Knani, Chivi, and Yevusi, except that the nations are in a different order. We'll have to figure out why that is. So first, let's just figure out why it is that the Girgashi dropped off the list. Why is it that we only have 6 nations and the Girgashi are absent? So the Ramban has two possible suggestions here in sources 8 and 9. First, the Ramban says, perhaps the last nation's land was not Zavat Chalav Udvash, it was not flowing with milk and honey. It could be, and we'll see that the Ramban will develop this further in a moment, that not all of the land, the territories of the seven nations were equally fertile. Not all of the territories were equally desirable. And therefore, when Hashem is listing off, again, Eretz Tova, Eretz Rechava, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, he wanted to list only the nations, only the territories that meet all three descriptions. Since the Girgashi's territory did not fit Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, therefore it was not listed.
But aren't we under the impression that the whole land was that way? Until you just said this, we can always think that the whole land was milk and honey, with no exception. But what you're saying now, that's not the case.
I'm not saying it. Ramban is saying
okay,
it. Okay, Ramban. Excuse me. I wouldn't say such a thing about Eretz Yisrael.
I apologize.
Yeah.
Different parts of the country had different characteristics. You know that.
Yeah, but
they wouldn't bring Bikurim from here.
I hear.
It's a given.
We'll actually see there's a machlokas lahalacha. The Ramban claims, at least in his Peirush al Torah, which you have to see whether it's consistent with what he says in other places in his commentary on Shas, but he says that the only time that you need bring Bikurim is from the lands that are Zavat Chalav Udvash. And therefore, says the Ramban, if we can identify one or two territories that are not Zavat Chalav Udvash, those territories will be exempt from Bikurim. The Rambam says that all seven lands, all the territories of all seven nations are obligated in Bikurim, and presumably that's where our perception of all seven lands being Zavat Chalav Udvash comes from, although it could be that the Ramban says that even lands which are not Zavat Chalav Udvash bring Bikurim, but it could also be that he holds that all seven were Zavat Chalav Udvash. But the Ramban clearly says that not all seven were Zavat Chalav Udvash, and therefore not all seven need to bring Bikurim, only the ones that were Zavat Chalav Udvash need to bring Bikurim. Now it's important to note that, remember, sources 6 and 7 both had a list of 6. Source number 6 talked about Zavat Chalav Udvash. Source number 7 did not. Source number 7 makes no mention of Eretz Tova, makes no mention of Eretz Rechava, it makes no mention of Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. It just says, I'll bring you to this, the place where these nations live. I'll send an angel before you, and the angel will destroy these nations, these 6 nations. So the Ramban's idea over here in Parag Gimel, where he says that only the 6 nations are listed because those are the only ones that meet the description of Zavat Chalav Udvash, doesn't work for source number 7. And therefore the Ramban says, again, the second line in source number 8, that the second explanation is needed to explain why only 6 nations are listed. Perhaps here Hashem only alluded to the nations that they conquered first, the ones who gathered against Yoshua, and whom Hashem delivered into his hand. Chazal tell us that the Girgashi fled, and therefore was not listed amongst the nations that were destroyed. They remained intact, they preserved, right, their national body, and they fled to Africa. And so the Girgashi, for all we know, could be dwelling in one of the African countries nowadays, and they were not destroyed like the nations that chose to give battle to Yoshua. Here, only those who fought and were conquered are mentioned, and that seems more consistent with source number 7. Right? In number 7, it says, God is going to send an angel before you, and he'll destroy these 6 nations. Obviously, the Girgashi, which was not destroyed, doesn't belong on the list of nations that were destroyed by God's angel who went before the Jews.
They morphed into Africa, you're saying,
basically. They moved. They went
relocate.
To, perhaps,
relocate.
Perhaps to Uganda. And again, it's not going to explain... It's not going to explain source number 6 as well. Source number 6 makes no mention, right, of the nations that fought versus the nations that didn't, right, but at least it'll explain 7. Perhaps between the two of them we can explain both. The Ramban also notes, again in source number 9, based on this, we must explain that the land of milk and honey mentioned above did not refer to the land of the Perizi. Right, this is something that we'll encounter in a moment, that there's a place where only 5 nations are listed. There's a place where only 5 nations are listed. The Ramban says that he thinks that the 6 nations are the nations that fought and were destroyed. The 5 nations are the ones whose land was flowing with milk and honey. But based on that, he's troubled, because in the list of 6 nations, says God says, I'll bring you to an Eretz Tova, I'll bring you to an Eretz Rechava, I'll bring you to an Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, I'll bring you to the land of, and then he lists 6 nations. So it would seem, again that was in source number 6, that there are 6 nations whose land is flowing with milk and honey. So the Ramban says, so how can it be? The Ramban says, the 6 nations are the ones that are flowing with milk and honey. The 5 nations are the ones that are flowing with milk and honey. Well, which one is it? Is it that 6 are flowing with milk and honey? Or is it that only 5 are flowing with milk and honey? So the Ramban says, I'll tell you what. There are 6 which are Eretz Tova Urechava, that they're good and they're broad, whatever that means. There's only 5 that are Zavat Chalav Udvash, and the 6th territory, which is listed with all 3, is only listed because of Eretz Tova and Eretz Rechava. It's not listed on account of the Zavat Chalav Udvash. Right? The Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash mentioned above did not refer to the land of the Perizi. The Perizi is only mentioned in that list because its land was Tova Urechava, good and broad. Perizi is included in the list of 6 nations that are mentioned everywhere, right? Since only the Girgashi fled. So let's just take a look at the list of 5. It appears in source number 10, which is in Shmos, Parshas Beshalach, Perak Yud Gimel. And we say, people who say the parshios of Tefillin every morning should be familiar with this. This is one of the 4 parshios that are contained in the Tefillin, and those who like to say all of the parshios that are contained in the Tefillin will say this every morning. Vayaki v'yacha Hashem al Eretz HaKenani, when God brings you to the land of the Kenani, the Chiti, the Emori, the Chivi and the Yevusi. 5. Kenani is 1, Chiti is 2, Amori is 3, Chivi is 4, and Yevusi is 5. Asher nishba la'avosecha la'aseh lach Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. Again, the appellation of Zavas Chalav Udvash. So it's these 5 which are Zavas Chalav Udvash. And he says, when you get there, Shivat Yamim Tochal Matzot, etc. And again, the Ramban makes the following note. He says, even though we only count here 5 nations, of course, all 7 are included. It doesn't mean to say that there are certain mitzvos that take effect as soon as you've conquered 5 nations, and other mitzvos that take effect once you've conquered all 7. We don't find that. The 7 and the remaining 3 we find that for by the Ari Miklat, but the 5 and the remaining 2 we do not necessarily find that for. All 7 of them are Canaanite nations, and so when we mention Kenani, Kenani means it's a umbrella term which includes both the nations that are all the nations that live there, which were not listed independently on this list of 5. And one of the nations didn't have its own name and was just called Canaan. And Chazal says the Ramban, that the lands of these 5 nations were flowing with milk and honey, but not the lands of the other 2. And that is why Hashem particularly emphasized these 5 when telling the Jews where he would bring them. So this is the end of the Ramban's analysis of why different numbers of nations are listed in different places.
Is it saying why the Girgashi fled? We know why they fled, and you want to face Israel? Is that the idea? They were afraid of Israel?
The Girgashi fled, they knew. The Ramban has a very interesting line. He says, do you know why it was particularly the Canaanim whom God chose to live in that land while the Jews were in exile in Egypt? Why particularly the Canaanim who were the custodians of Eretz Yisrael? See whether I quoted it here. Ramban says that Canaan was cursed by Noach, Eved Avadim Yihyah Le'achav. And so Hashem wanted Eretz Canaan to be in the custody of the Avadim, of the Bnei Shein, in order, right, that no one should be able to have a claim on it, because Masha Kana Eved, Kana Rabo. And so it was particularly the nations of Canaan that needed to live there in order to just be custodians and not to have any independent claim. Then most of them didn't realize that that was the point, and so they decided to fight. But the Girgashi remained true to, they understood the purpose, and so when the time came to leave, they left. I think that some Mishonim identify the Girgashi with the Yoshvei Givon, the Givonim. And we know that the Givonim... Hmm? What do we know about the Gibeonites? They were Shoah B'Mayim, and how did they become Shoah B'Mayim? And why did Yeshua make them Shoah B'Mayim? Because, right, they disguised themselves as travelers from a faraway land. And they came to Yeshua and they said, we heard about all the miracles that God performed for you, and now let's make a treaty, and we'll have a treaty with you that we're not going to harm one another, and we'll stand by one another in case anything should happen. And so Yeshua signed the treaty with them. Then the other nations of Canaan were so infuriated by what they perceived as the betrayal of the Givonites that they decided, instead of fighting the Jews, that they were going to attack the city of Givon. They were going to attack their own members who had signed a treaty with the Jews. Like, that was more important to them than actually, you know, defending their own homeland. And so they gathered together and they attacked the city of Givon. So the Givonim sent messengers to Yoshua, and they said, hey, we just signed a treaty that we're going to defend one another in case we're attacked. Here we're being attacked, so come defend us. So what do? You sign the treaty, you honor the treaty. So Yeshua came to defend them, and that's the source of the famous expression, Shemesh b'Givon Dom. Right, that was during the Battle of Givon, which was a battle that was not precipitated against the Jews. It was a battle of the other six nations of Canaan against the Givonim, who are associated with the Girgashi. And Yeshua came to defend the Givonim, the Girgashi, who had made this treaty, right, with the Jews. But I think others, right, the Ramban over here is saying, though, the Girgashi were the ones who fled to Africa, one way or another, there was this one nation that was not destroyed together with the other six. So, one thing that I want to just consider here is, if you look at the chart at the bottom of the third page, you'll discover that more or less the nations that are listed at the times of Yetzias Mitzrayim are consistent. You'll see that there are five nations who are named after the sons of Canaan, and two nations that are named after the names that these nations had in the times of Avraham. So the Chiti, the Yevusi, the Emori, the Girgashi, and the Chivi are all named after sons of Canaan, and the Prizi and the Canaani are the names that nations had at the time of Avraham, even though they were never particularly, they were not, there was no son of Canaan whose name was Prizi. If you look, though, in Vicharosi Mabris, just bear with me for a second, I haven't even done this calculation myself, which nations are mentioned? You can go through it, any of those who have a pencil. There's the Canaani, and the Chiti, and the Emori, and the Prizi, and the Yevusi, and the Girgashi. Right, so it's basically the six nations. It's the six nations who fought. No, it's not the six nations who fought, because the Girgashi did not fight. Right, so it's six nations, but it's not the same list of six that appears in sources number 6 and 7. Right, on the list of the Charosi Moabris, the Chivi is absent, and it's replaced instead by the Girgashi. So what's happening here? Why is the Chivi replaced by the Girgashi? I don't have an answer for this, so everyone is welcome.
Rhetorical question.
Make that a rhetorical question. It's a question that I want to hear. I want. I'm collecting answers for it.
That's if you know what you don't.
No, I mean it requires some independent thought. Okay, something to consider tomorrow when you're saying the Charosim Moabris, right? Not just why there are six, but why is it these six in particular?
Was Hanander seven?
Yeah. So the Ramban tells us, I'll tell you why there are six. Either because the six are the Zavat Chalav Udvash, but those six include the Chivi and don't include the Girgashi. Or, says Ramban, there are six because there are only six that fought and the seventh one didn't fight. But again, the six that fought do not include the Girgashi and do include the Chivi. So why is it that in the Charoti Mo'abris you have six nations, but the Chivi is absent, the Chivi is Zavat Chalav Udvash, the Chivi chose to fight and was destroyed? So why is Chivi absent from this particular list of six, as opposed to Girgashi, which was not Zavat Chalav Udvash, and which did not choose to fight, and is nonetheless present on this list of six? So that's an anomaly that we need to think about.
But you have to compare it to source number two, because the Harot in Moabrit talking about the list that was mentioned in Avraham Avinu.
So then at least it's a list.
Exactly, so that's where you're going to look for the answer, you know, that comparison.
Right, but there then we should expect to find either the seven that they got from Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the ten that God promised to Avraham. Right? If you're talking about a list of six already, so you need to find something that distinguishes these six that the other four don't possess.
I think it's a people problem. It's a joke.
Okay. So that's one outstanding issue, I think, that we need to consider, that the Ramban's analysis takes us only so far, and we need to analyze on our own a little bit further than this. A second issue that we need to consider is the order in which the nations appear. The Ramban doesn't address this at all, but if you look again at the list, you'll see that the nations appear in different orders each time. So, for instance, even let's say there are two sources that have only six names on them. But between these two sources, you'll see Chiti is always second, Yebusi is always six, but Mori in the second one is first, and in the first one, in source six, it's third, in source seven, it's first. Chivi is always fifth, but Prizi in source number six is fourth, and in source number seven is third. Knani in source number six is first, and in source number seven is fourth. So what possibly could explain that?
We don't know.
Well, with this I think we can speculate a little bit more about. Oh. We already noticed, the Ramban pointed out, that source number six was describing Eretz Tova, Eretz Vichava, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. Source number seven is describing the nations that fought. So could it be that when we're listing the Eretz Tova Urechava and Zavat Chalav Udvash, we're listing the territories in order of their fertility, in order of their appeal? And so we'll put the Kanani first. That was a territory which was the best of all seven, right? Followed the best of all six, followed by the Chiti, followed by the Emori, followed by the Prizi, followed by the Chivi, followed by the Yivusi. But when it came to the battle, so then there is a different criterion that we use for determining the order of the list. Perhaps it was the ones with the most fearsome armies. So that would be why the Emori came first. Perhaps the army of the Emori was the most fierce. Or perhaps the army of the Emori was the first one that was destroyed. Right, or perhaps the army of the Emori, even if they weren't the most fierce, they were the ones who were the most set on fighting against the Jews. So there's a different set of criteria that determine the order for the one that describes the Vehichaditiv, when God says, I'm going to send my angel before you and it's going to destroy these nations, and a totally different set of criteria when it comes to listing the Eretz Tova Urechava, the Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash.
So the biggest battle was with the Emori.
I'm speculating.
It was a
good speculation.
They want to bring the rock down the mountain. So the mountains came and crushed them. That's what the Amori, the flood came out. Al-Kenya, Omar. So
right.
They didn't really fight.
Sihon was the Melech HaEmori.
Well, that was the one?
Sihon was described as Sihon Melech HaEmori. Sihon Melech HaEmori and Og Melech HaBashan. So you would expect. So that makes a lot of sense because the Amori were probably the first ones, right? Who fought, and they were also the first ones to be conquered. And so that might be why Amori appears first on that list, even though it doesn't appear first on the other list. And I think there are similar speculations to be made, right, about the other lists as well. Right? It's worth noting that in source number 10, which is also listing the Zavat Chalav Udvash, so Kenani appears first, just like in source number 6, which talks about Zavat Chalav Udvash, Kenani appears first. Source number 10 is parallel to source number 6, although it's important to note that... let's just see. In number 10, Kenani is first, Chiti is second, Amori is third, that's all the same, right? And then Chivi... right, is fourth because there's no prezi, right, and then Yevusi is fifth, so it's the same exact order again because both of these are describing the Zavat Chalav Udvash. So that just seems to confirm the idea that it has to do with the order of desirability, right, of these territories. The only thing that remains to be worked out is, let's say, source number 4. Right, why does source number 4 start out with the Chiti, right, and go from there to the Girgashi? Right, source number 4 is describing again, what's the context? Again, that the nations that are going to be destroyed, right, and no making a treaty with them, etc. So you would expect that 4 would be parallel to 7. Right? But there are a number of differences that still remain to be worked out. Right? And then, of course, the difference between sources 1 and 2, the sons of Canaan listed in Parashas Noah, and the nations in the times of Abraham, again, why is it that they appear in a particular order in Parashas Noah? Probably that's the order in which they were born, as opposed to in the times of Abraham, it may be the order of the national prominence of population or something, you know, gross national product, whatever it was, that we put the order in a slightly different order when listing the nations that were around in the times of Abraham. So I think we've seen a little bit the Ramban's framework for explaining why we've gotten from 11 to 10 to 7 to 6 to 5. He's not saying anything for certain, but he gives one or two possibilities to explain each of the transitions, and we've gone through them, and we've also seen a number of things that the Ramban did not explain, but which we can speculate a little bit, the Ramban having given us the methodological tools for analyzing it, so we were able to begin to work out why it is that the orders were different, and why it is... that's for next time. Yeah, if anyone wants, I'll collect it.